everybody, Stu Smith here with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we have a special guest, Joe Kaufman, with us today. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, sir. Excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a huge fan of you. If you guys don't know, Joe Kaufman is one of the co-owners and founders of a business called The Warrior Calling, and he's a former Navy SEAL, former BUDS instructor too, correct?
And yes, sir. Yeah, I did the 4 years at second phase.
Oh, nice. Nice. And then he also has a website called The Warrior Calling as well, devoted to teaching young men and women about training and specifically spec ops level type training. So, you know, that it's really good. And I tell people all the time, I have a way to train, Joe, not the way to train. So I'm always looking to discuss with, you know, fellow frogmen, especially who came into, you know, out of the military and into a fitness role, just some of the things that they've learned over their journey, as well as maybe some of the reasons why you decided to go into a fitness world. Because like me, I saw things that were missing. I saw things that I says like, I can fill in this vacuum of where I think, you know, I could do something better, or I could, you know, provide some information or service out there, you know, that didn't exist. So, you know, I'd love to hear your story about, you know, let's take it from like when you were preparing for BUDS, and how do you think that has changed as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was in, you know, in high school, that's when 9/11 happened for me. So that was a huge moment for me. I knew that I wanted to serve. And that was, if I was going to serve, might as well serve with the best of the best, which Navy SEALs are the best. So I was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to go do. That's what I'm going to go train for. But growing up, I was always a very skinny kid. Just, I got beat up. I kind of was a nerd in high school. I was a piano player. Like just somebody, if you looked at, you're like, yeah, that guy's never going to be a Navy SEAL. You would never in a million years think he would ever do that. But really, I had a strong sense of justice. I felt like this is something I need to do. So when I was 17 years old, I made a decision that I was going to train, and I was going to start training hard to become a SEAL. And I knew I had a long ways to go. Well, back in, you know, 2003, 2004, there was not a lot of information out there on becoming a SEAL and how to train for it. There's a few books, and I read yours, The 12 Weeks to BUDS. That was my Bible. I went through that multiple times. I have still got it here in my house. It's dog-eared. I refer to it. I still look at it, man. That's the go-to book for everybody, where most people start when they're going down that road for BUDS prep. And so I started training hard, but it was hard for me. I just didn't know what I was doing. So I tried a bunch of different things, different types of training methodologies. I would just ran a lot, just get a lot of mileage into my belt, got the shin splints. I got injured in different ways. It really took me 3 years of training to prepare and really get my body where I wanted it to be, where I thought it needed to be prior to going to BUDS. I thought I was prepared, and I shipped out in 2007. Showed up in BUDS. I had a winter class, made it through Hell Week, and in Walk Week, you know, everybody walks after Hell Week. There's a week of Walk Week. After that, I had a hard time running with the class. I was like, what's going on? My leg's killing me. And I realized, I went to the doc, they took x-rays. I had a femur stress fracture in the middle of my left femur. So I got med rolled post Hell Week. For two classes, I rolled into class. It was BUDS class 265 that I rolled into. And I finished out with those guys all the way through BUDS and then SQT. But really, going through BUDS, I was hoping to go through one shot. That's what everybody wants, right? But there's things that happen that are, you know, out of your control sometimes. Maybe your preparation wasn't quite where it needed to be. There's a lot of different factors. But coming out of BUDS, I felt strong. Going into SQT, I felt strong. Went into SDV school post SQT. So I went to a mini sub driving school in 2008, out to SDV team one. Yeah. So
that's what I did after BUDS. Okay. I was SDVer as well. Yeah.
Did you go to team SDV team two or?
Yep. I was on the East Coast. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Team two.
Got it. So yeah, when we put the request in, you're going through SQT and you say, hey, I want to go to SEAL team on the West Coast or the East Coast or at SDV. I put in a request to go to Hawaii. I thought that would be pretty cool. Staying with the bread and butter of what the SEAL teams originally were designed for is that clandestine operations, subsurface, all that sneaky stuff.
I tell you what, man, you learn how to dive really well at SDVs.
Yeah, that's what you do pretty much for a year long for one mission. You're diving for a full straight year.
Yeah.
So you better like the water.
Did you count how many dive hours you got in that year?
Oh, gosh. I have a logbook. I don't remember. But
you know, we had a plaque.
Unbelievable.
We had a plaque at SDV Team 2. It was who could get the most dive time in a year. And there were people with 300, 400 hours of dive time in a year. I was just like, oh my God.
It's insane how much you dive, and you get good. You get very, very good at your job doing that over and over and over. And I enjoyed it. I really liked the water. Yeah. I had dive experience prior to the Navy, and I really wanted to kind of follow in that. And I loved it. I've always loved the water. So I stayed with that. I did 5 years out there. Did four deployments back to back. I did an augment with Dev Group out in Afghanistan. And then the other deployments were doing SDV ops, which I loved. I really liked the water operations and that doing the tactics and all that. Really that, I mean, that's a skill set. I think a lot of, as the global war on terror was kind of winding down, it's really, that's where we're going back to as SEAL operators, which is, it's pretty cool to see. And after those 5 years, my wife and I were like, yeah, you're kind of burned out after doing deployment after deployment. So I did a year at SDV school teaching guys how to drive and drive the mini sub, which is great. I love that too. But we had just moved the schoolhouse from Panama City to Hawaii. So I was like, well, we spent 6 years here. Now let's go back to San Diego. We have family here in California. So it made sense. So I got orders to Bud second phase.
Nice.
And moved out. Yeah. We moved out here back to San Diego, and really coming from the SDV world with the real world experience being in the water, it made sense to just go to second phase, teach closed circuit diving, pool comp, all of that. So stepped into that for 4 years. I loved it. It was one of the best experiences that I can have. That I can say that I had in the Navy, to be honest. I love that. I love the teaching. I love teaching guys. I love training up the next generation of warriors. Seeing them progress, you see them come through. I worked hell weeks. You see them come through that process of going through the fire of first phase, and then they're hungry. They want to learn. They come into second phase, and you can teach them. Some of these guys, they never breathed on any type of breathing apparatus before, and then they come into second phase, and you can take them from where they're going through pool comp and going through that process of finding out how they react underwater to stress. And then teaching them closed circuit diving, where by the end of second phase, they're charting their dives. They're going hitting targets in the bay. They're planning their dives. And it's a pretty cool experience to see them grow that much within a phase and move on and see how you've impacted their lives and taught them things, it was very rewarding for me.
Yeah, that is a rewarding phase. I remember, going into it. I mean, I had a, Patty scuba qual before I went to Budge, which is pretty minimal. But, to go from day one at second phase to 2 months later, you're a completely different animal.
Oh, yeah.
Hats off to the second phase instructors, because, at the end of that phase, you really started seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, of Buds, and you didn't feel like a total butthead anymore of just getting hammered all the time. You're actually learning something of value.
Right. Yeah. And I loved it from the instructor side. And I remember going through second phase myself and just enjoying being in the water and actually learning something where you're not just getting your ass handed to you every single day, but you actually are learning a skill set, which is what you want, which we want to do anyways. Like, that's kind of why you're going through Buds. Everybody wants to start learning what it's like to be a SEAL. What are you going to do in that job? So I loved it. But after 4 years at second phase, it was time for me to move on. I only did 10 years in the SEAL teams, and I cut it off. That was my time that I wanted to spend. My wife and I had plans to travel around. So we moved to Europe for a little while and I got my master's degree, just kind of moved around, did different things, and really came back to San Diego, started doing real estate. And I wasn't fulfilled. And I had guys reaching out to me. They knew I was a former Buds instructor, and they said, "Hey, I want to be training. I want to train for Buds. I want to prep. I want somebody to help me." So I started training guys on the side, and I really loved it. I loved coaching guys. I loved training. I loved helping them reach their goals, prep for the PST. And it just made sense for me to kind of go back to that and help guys out. And a couple of years ago, I just decided to quit my job and go all in on becoming a coach and trainer and helping people prepare for not only Buds, but for Army Rangers, Marine Recon, Special Forces, any of those sort of a top tier elite level preparation that's required of you before you go down that selection course. And seeing guys go to Buds and really having the Buds experience as a going through Buds myself, being a Buds instructor, and then now being on the other side of things, knowing what's going to come during that time for everybody and being able to help them prep for that. I think some people think I'm going to go to Buds, and then when I'm there, I'm just not going to quit. You know, everybody has a passing PST when they go there. You know, everybody says they have a never quit mindset, but did you actually prep for what is going to happen at Buds? And that's the gap that I saw. And it's not a quick fix for most people. It takes some time.
So yeah, you did it. You did it right with your several years of training, you know, after high school, because that's what it takes. I mean, most 18-year-old kids are still growing, right? And they haven't really understood, you know, what that next level of fitness really is. And if you don't have anybody around you that's doing it also, that may be a little bit ahead of you in this journey, I mean, you don't really understand the level of fitness that is required to have the foundation just to get through that training program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's insane, really, if you think about it, how some guys they'll leave high school and they'll go join the Navy. And yeah, they can pass a PST, but they've never tested themselves on requirements, on passing standards that are within Buds. And they show up and then they expect, "I'm going to show up and then I'm going to be trained to be a Navy SEAL." It's like, no, you're going into a selection process at Buds. That's what it is. Yeah, you'll learn some skill sets along the way, but really that's, you know, 6 months of Buds, it's selection. And a lot of the skill sets that you learn to actually be an operator is in SQT, SEAL qualification training. That's when most of that happens. So yeah, guys come out of high school and they've seen a movie about being a Navy SEAL and they want to do that. And that's great. But just take a step back and say, "Hey, where are you at physically, even mentally? And if you're not prepared, then don't jump the gun. Actually get yourself trained up, spend some, you know, if it takes you 2 to 3 years, that's fine. If you want to go get a degree and get some college under your belt, then do that. But be honest with yourself and where you are right now and where you need to be prior to leaving, because if you leave and jump the gun, then most guys, as they find out, they'll do another jobs in the Navy right now because they didn't actually prepare mentally and physically for what they're stepping into."
Absolutely. Yeah. I try to get people to realize there's really two phases to this journey, right? And the first phase of your preparation is, yes, you have to pass that PST. And you're right. Everybody has a passing PST score. That's a no-brainer. That's going to get you to the training, but it won't get you through the training, right? And then you have to start looking at, and that's all public information. Everybody knows there's 4-mile timed runs and there's 2-mile swims with fins and there's obstacle courses and there's a section in there for 4 weeks that just sucks because you have logs and boats, you know, carrying around all those things and now rucks. And, you know, so there makes no sense to not prepare yourself for that. And unfortunately, even with all the information that's out there, and I say there's almost too much information out there, to be honest with you, it's with all the information that's out there, people disregard that and they go in there with a severe weakness that they've completely ignored. You know, it could be swimming with fins. It could be underwater swims. It could be treading water. You know, it could be running, right? And they completely ignored it and expected it to not be exposed within your first few weeks of buds. And unfortunately, when does everybody quit or decide that this isn't for them? Is, you know, those first few weeks before Hell Week, even.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And it's brutal right now. I mean, if they don't need SEALs in the teams, I mean, it's tight. That spigot going to the teams is almost shut off.
Yeah, it's so true. And so you have to prepare for it. And I think you have to be honest with yourself. And it takes a bit of maturity. Like we talked about earlier, is if you're an 18-year-old, you might have that maturity level. But most guys, I mean, I remember when I was 18 years old, I was not mature. I knew I had to grow and develop and prepare myself. And I think another part of this that some people don't think about is just because your body is dialed in, maybe you can pass a 4-mile run, you can pass a 2-mile swim, you've prepped yourself for that. Well, if your mindset isn't where it needs to be, so you don't have that, you don't have a strong why, you know, everybody talks about what's your why? Why are you doing this? Which is important.
Very important.
So if you don't have, if you don't have something that's driving you forward, that's really, you know, I call it the warrior calling. If you feel called to do this, it's something you need to do in your life. This isn't something, that'd be cool to check the box and say I was a SEAL, right? It's something a lot deeper. And so when you're at buds and you're cold, you're wet, you're sandy, especially during first phase, if you don't have a strong why, then you're not going to be able to tap into grit. You're not going to be able to grind through those days when, you know, you're sore and you're up late at night and you're doing rock portage or you're doing boats and logs and you're cold, wet and sandy. If you don't have a strong why, you're not going to be able to really, your mind and your body aren't going to be able to tap into grit. You're not going to be able to move forward because your body's going to say, I'm really hurt and sore. So why am I doing this? Why am I pushing myself to continually be miserable and to go through these evolutions to push my body if there's nothing, there's no goal, or you're just thinking it'd be cool, you know, it'd be cool to be a Navy SEAL or whatever it is that your goal is. If there's no strong why, then you're not going to be able to have that mind body connection. You know, it's just your body's going to say, hey, why the heck are you doing this? And that's what happens to a lot of guys, I think.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point because I call that the moment of truth where you better have an answer for that question that just pops in your head. Why am I doing this? You know, wouldn't it be nice just to go back, take a shower, you know, clean up? But why are you doing this to yourself? Because there's something in your head that there's something that does that. And you have to have an answer right there to shut that off. And if you don't, it's you're done. You really are.
Yeah, it's so true. And if you're doing the, you know, surf torture where you're lying in the water and it's cold and the water's coming over your head and you're linked arms with your buddies, well, it's not like you can put out harder. You can do more pushups or you can run faster to finish the evolution out. You can't. You're just lying there being cold, being miserable. And that's when your mind's going to say, hey, why are you doing this? You know, what's going on? Why don't you go and just ring out because it's nice and warm and you're in the barracks, right? There's a hot shower and all of that.
You know, it's funny because whenever someone next to you, when you're linked arm in arm and they just undo their lock and you see them just get up and walk away, you know, it's one of those things of like, damn, I'm not there. I'm not there yet, but you know, it's like, you see it and you're like, don't look. It's like every time I saw the bell, I just averted my eyes as quickly as I could. I didn't want to see the bell.
Exactly. Cause if you allow it to be an option, then your mind will start to like, let it creep further and further. And then you'll have a moment of where you're going to see somebody who's faster than you. Maybe he's the boat crew leader. Maybe he's, that like for me, it was our LPO in our buds class. He quit on a night we were doing, I think it was rock portage or something like that, or it was some evolution at night. And we were all lined up on the beach and we thought he had ran back to the instructor, back to first phase to say, hey, we're ready for the evolution. But he had just run off the beach and quit. He'd rang out and we didn't know that. And then the instructor staff showed up and we're like, you know, where's the LPO? And it's like, no, he's gone. He rang out. And it shook the class, and that's what happened. It'll shake you because you're like, well, he's faster than me. He's the class leader. And if he quit, what the heck am I doing? So you really have to have that strong why, because if your confidence is shaken like that, and then you have to really focus on what's right for you. Hey, this is your path. His decision is his decision, and you're gonna have to let him go and make his decision. But for you, you got to keep putting that one foot in front of the other, and that's the only way you're gonna make it at the end of the day.
Absolutely, very good point. There's not many chances I get to have Bud's instructors who've worked Hell Weeks on the show. So over your years of, you know, being a Bud's instructor, you know, through Hell Weeks, or, you know, involved with anything, you know, that's first phase related, or maybe even pool comp related, what are some of the, I guess, things that you've noticed over the years, whether it's actual Bud's itself or the type of students that are coming in, compared to maybe what you're seeing now in your training business? You seeing the type of similarities that need to be there, or are you seeing some lost souls in the process, you know, still as well? So it's got kind of a tough question. It's just, you know, as a Bud's instructor going through Hell Week, what were some of the like neat signs that you saw young people having, you know, that were successful?
Yeah, no, that's great. So one thing you'll notice is, and it's really the character quality of somebody that, you know, has a good chance of making it, is somebody that has confidence. And it's not that necessarily they have cockiness, but you can tell that when they go into an evolution, they're putting their best foot forward. They're just as cold and they're just as miserable as the next guy, but they're still holding their head up. They still have that confidence, knowing that they're going to move through this. They're going to keep rolling through this. They want to be there. They think in the terms of, hey, I'm grateful for this opportunity that I have to go through Bud's. There's hundreds of other people out there that would love to be in my shoes right now, going through this experience, and they count it themselves grateful for being in that environment. I think also officer candidates have this as well, where they hold their chest up, right? They have most of them hold their head up high. They have confident level that is normally higher than enlisted. And it's because they realize the opportunity they have. There's less opportunities for officers to go through Bud's. It's more challenging to actually get your spot and show up there. And so when they're there, not only have they had to prepare to a higher degree, but they also have that more gratitude for that experience, knowing that, hey, there are so many people that wish they could be here right now going through this. And I think that's one of the biggest things I've seen, is just if you can come into Bud's and you have confidence, knowing really confidence in yourself, that you did everything in your power to prepare, confidence in your calling, confidence in what you've set out to achieve. I think that's really the thing that can really be different than everybody else. Because everybody should have that passing P. Everybody comes in with a passing PST.
Oh, sure.
Right. But it's what, you know, deep down inside, if you don't have confidence and you're like, wow, I've never ran a passing 4-mile run before, or I've never put myself out of my comfort zone. Well, then you're going to show up to Bud's and you're not going to be very confident. You know, the first time you get yelled at by an instructor, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening right now? This is, and you build it up so much. I think maybe that's the problem too, with much information, is guys are just blowing this out of proportion, where, you know, just say it's going to be difficult. Just say it's going to be a challenging thing to go through, and you train yourself, you prepare yourself, you have a strong why, and then go there and make it happen for yourself. Ignore everything else. Ignore the stories you've heard about anybody else. Make this your story. Make this your experience. Go into it with confidence and be grateful for this experience. I think that would help, especially right now with a lot of guys going into Bud's, and the numbers right now are,
it's scary.
It's brutal.
Yeah. Yes. It's scary. You know, that's a really good point. I have, I've always stated that, when a young man, you know, going through Bud's and they have a certain amount of confidence, but you see the flip side of it too. In fact, you know what, they did a study, a little research study, you know how they do all the Bud's research studies on all the classes and stuff after Hell Week and all that. They did a study on confidence and underconfidence, right? Or overconfidence and underconfidence, mm-hmm. right? And the people that, you know, if you think about the bell curve that, you know, that is Buds and all the quitters are up here and people that make it on the other side, it was the people that were not making it through were either overconfident or underconfident, mm-hmm. right? And there was that little happy medium of just some self-confidence without cockiness and arrogance, but with also without any doubt in your abilities that made the group or made that person part of the, you know, the graduation group. So I thought, So both ends of the spectrum are bad, right? In the middle is perfect.
That makes sense. Yeah, it really does. And because I think comes with that, that middle ground of confidence is that you have a bit of humility also, because you know that you're not that, that cocky guy who's been a collegiate athlete who comes in, who can crush a swim, right? You can just destroy everybody in the water. But when it comes to boats and logs, it really takes it out of you and you dread that. And I think you'll see guys come in and they have overconfidence in one area and then they'll be shaken. They can't hold that log and go into an overhead squat, or that boat pounding on their head, it just takes it out of them and they just dread those evolutions. So they come in super confident, very confident, and then they'll be taken down a few notches because they realize that, wow, this is actually really hard. And the first time they have something really, really challenging that happens in their life, if it happens at Buds, then that's a pretty big wake up call for some of these guys. And it really knocks them for a loop and they realize that, man, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe this isn't for me. So that's why in training, it's really, really good to find out, hey, can you even tap into grit in your preparation? So finding things that are challenging in your preparation and training before you get to Buds to test yourself. So, you know, the early morning runs, getting out there and actually performing and seeing your numbers drop on a 2 mile swim. Maybe it's just something really challenging, like a physical challenge, such as you're going to go hike this trail and you're going to go start from this day to this day and you accomplish it. And you see yourself go into these things, these tests that you provide yourself, and you see yourself come out the other end, a winner. That builds your confidence too. So you know that you can go into some pretty hard challenges within Buds and you know you have that grit and that stick-to-itiveness to make it through those hard things. Because everybody knows you can't prepare 100% for Buds.
No.
Can't, you know, there's things that are, yeah, there's things that happen and that you just can't prepare for. But if you have prepared on the front end, being able to tap into grit, being able to tap into things that are, you know, really getting yourself out of your comfort zone and knowing you can complete something that you put up as like, this is a challenge for myself, and you do that, well, then you go to Buds, the challenge comes up, you know that you can move through that and accomplish it.
I love it. So with your training background now, where are you kind of focusing, like daily training programs with folks that work out with you? Are you able to, you know, set up safe boundaries where people are able to tap into that grit? Because I have a couple of different ways I like to do it. Mm-hmm. I personally like first thing in the morning, get the workouts done. We're outside. I'm here in Maryland. This morning we were working out. It was about to snow on us with, you know, 28 degrees and, you know, we're deadlifting in the snow. I mean, it was just, you know, it sucks, you know, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I've always said that you can build that grit and that mental toughness that you need for future challenges, you know, one step at a time. You know, it's almost like you mm-hmm. get a spoonful every day, you know, versus, you know, a dump truck full because you just, you know, did something that borderline put you in the hospital.
Right.
So you gotta be real safe. I always say there's a fine line between mental toughness and stupidity, mm-hmm. right? If you're screwing up your training and you're unable to run for 2 months because you got stress fractures or knee tendonitis because you overdid it, you know, on an ill progressed run, right? You just jump into a marathon after not training for one or something, for instance. You know, there's some fine lines there. So, what are you able to do with your folks that have been, you seem to be really helpful?
Yeah. So a big part of that is Yeah, definitely not jumping the gun for a lot of these people, because most people want to, you know, they have a foundation that they're at, like they've done sports in high school or they they played sports in college. So most people have that. What we like to do is I focus on a transformation process, because anybody can go into a workout and push themselves and really find their limits. But if they're not, if it's not the right level for them, meaning it's either too difficult or too easy, then it's not going to provide what they need in their training. So we have with our programming, how we set it up is anybody that we work with, we do a week of testing. So the first thing we do is a week of finding out what their PST scores are, their 1 mile run, their 4 mile run. We have a whole questionnaire process where we have them answer, hey, what are your goals? You know, what's your body weight? How many calories are you eating right now? Just really dig into where they are in this picture right now, in this day and time, instead of, you know, kind of guessing, because I think there's a lot of, because everybody's different on that. So we do a week of testing, and then we develop a customized programming for them for a cycle. So it ramps up in different categories. We do strength, speed, endurance, PST prep, and it ramps up, and then we have another testing week and a deload, so we can keep looking at the results as we go through training. And then with that type of programming, we also, we're not programming 20 plus miles for somebody who's running, they're running 5 miles a week right now. We wouldn't program something that's 20 miles or more. Yeah. So we look at where they're at with that questionnaire, with their first week of testing. But really getting them out of their comfort zone, really tapping into grit is something else that we've been working on. And that's pulling in competition. So if you're just training by yourself, you're only going to push yourself to a certain level. You know, let's be real.
Absolutely.
If you're on a run, like with the guys you train, if somebody is in front of you on a run, you're like, well, I'm not going to let that guy beat me. I'm going to keep pushing harder. Well, this guy's doing more bench. He's doing more bench press than I am, or deadlift. Well, I'm going to throw a little extra weight on so I can match his or go above it. So having competition within guys that you're training with is super important. That helps you level up to that next level of getting out of your comfort zone. We also do a monthly challenge. So we have fairly easy challenges, but they'll get you out of your comfort zone. So this month we had 8 count bodybuilders, max amount of 8 count bodybuilders you can do in 7 minutes. So we find something that's going to really push you, that's something you can do and everybody can accomplish, but it's definitely going to be challenging. It's definitely going to get you out of your comfort zone. And there's different challenges that we'll throw in each month, but it's training. It's a process of training, but it's also throwing in things that are going to continually test you and see where you're at and push your body, because we could all train for a year and still not be hitting the numbers we want to hit if we're not getting out of our comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're not assessing yourself, you're just guessing. Yes. It really is that. And you got to assess yourself, whether it's PST level stuff or it's, just foundational strength, that's something too, that a lot of athletes don't get access to if they're on the endurance side, mm-hmm. whereas, the football powerlifting guys, they need to work on their endurance. So I've found over the years as well is that, there's no one stop shop for all athletes, right? Who want to do the job. Even though the job is this, everybody comes in with all these different strengths and weaknesses. And if you don't assess yourself, one, you'll never know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And then two, your weaknesses will be exposed, I guarantee you, in the first 2 weeks of BUDS.
100%.
Period. I mean, they're going to be exposed, whether it's a big guy doing a timed run and trying to do the O course, or it's a little guy with a boat and log on his head. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the unique thing about BUDS, is that it doesn't matter who you are. Everybody has a weakness. There's a weakness there that, even if it's not so much of a weakness for you, you still have to bring your A game so it's not a weakness. So you don't fail, or you mm-hmm. actually do well enough to be in the top 50% of the class or whatever, you know. So there are things that, you know, you maybe not need. If you're a great swimmer, you can go and do those 2 mile ocean swims and just have a good hour, you know, just go chill out for an hour. But mm-hmm. if you suck at running, you got to bring your A game to that run the next event.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you're 100% right. There's going to be something that's going to test your resolve at Buds. It's going to be, you know, maybe you have a great endurance foundation where you can just run like a gazelle and you run faster than the instructor staff, you know, no problem. But then it comes time for, oh, you got to lift a log over your head, you know, overhead work, overhead mobility, stability, and strength. And it's non-existent because all you wanted to do is calisthenics. You know, all you practiced was calisthenics and you didn't do any weightlifting, and you show up and, oh my gosh, you know, this is just over the top for me. And it's not like you didn't prepare, but you just didn't think about maybe everything that was your weakness and actually work on that before going to Buds. And that's why you have to keep assessing, keep looking at where you're at, and just be honest with yourself. And if you need help from somebody, you need to talk to somebody to help move past the plateau. Well, then figure it out. The time for going to Buds and being unprepared is over. It's not like you can just show up there and say, hey, here I am, let's go. I want to be trained to be a SEAL. It just doesn't work that way. And it really never has. But I think especially now, it's so important that you prepare. And the analogy I like to tell guys is, when just imagine you're about to go get, you know, a job at Amazon as a software engineer or something like that. You wouldn't show up and never have put the work in. You never got the degrees. You never, practiced with computer engineering. You just never did anything to prepare yourself. And you go in for this high level job at Amazon to go get this, you know, computer science degree, or job rather. And you go there for the interview and the guy's like, okay, what have you done in your past? What have you done to prepare? And you say, hey, I like to tinker with computers. I like to play around with computers. I dabbled in computers. And you're like, okay. And the guy's like, okay, great. That's awesome. But you haven't gotten an internship under your belt. You haven't prepared yourself. You haven't got the degrees and you don't qualify for this job, but we got this entry-level job. You can pack boxes. You can drive a truck in the warehouse. And so the guy's like, okay, well, I guess I'll go do that. At least I got my foot in the door into Amazon. And they want to go do that. And so they get their foot in the door, but they never really actually get the job that they wanted. They never got that software engineer job. And so it's the same thing for Buds. You have to treat, and I hate to say this, but you have to treat it like a high level job. You have to prepare for it. You have to go into Buds already preparing for the job that you want. That's the reality. Because if you go there and you just hope and pray and magically think that it's going to work out for you and you don't prepare, then you're going to be just like that guy that shows up to the Amazon job interview and finds himself packing boxes and driving trucks, which is fine if that's what you want to do. If that's the goal that you have, you want to do that job, that's fine. But if you want to set your sights for a higher level job, then you're going to have to put the work in on the front end in order to qualify for it. And that's just, it seems like a no-brainer, but it happens, you know, all the time.
That's a great analogy, because I tell kids all the time, I'm like, look, don't even talk to a recruiter until you're crushing the PST, because here's what's going to happen. You're going to go in there, say, yeah, I want to be a SEAL. And they're going to say, well, here's the PST. You're going to take it with these instructors are going to show you how to do the PST and we'll get you in shape. Don't you worry. And, you know, and then they go there and what do? They've never taken a PST. They don't even know how to swim the combat side stroke. And then they fail the PST and they are now their job interview with the first time they ever met a Navy SEAL before, or even a former Navy SEAL before, is now he's a failure in the failure group. And guess who gets taken seriously on that first PST? The guys that are crushing the PST, right? Mm-hmm. If you try to call a recruiter after failing a PST, they won't even call you back for a week. You know, you're at the bottom of the list, but you go in there on day one, take that PST, crush it. Recruiters are calling you saying, all right, we got a ship date here. Switch you over to SO. You're in the draft and, you know, you're on your way. You know, you can name your time to go. But once again, that's just getting two Buds, right? There's the next level. right? There's that master's degree that you're talking about that you didn't get at Amazon, you know, that you needed to get that job. You know, you got to start figuring out what part of phase two of tactical fitness that is going to help you get through the training, because you can't rely on just PST numbers to get you through the training, you know, at all.
No, it's true. And I think it's just having an honest conversation with yourself and say, hey, where am I at right now? And if I want to go talk to the recruiter tomorrow, but you don't have the passing PST scores, well, then that's your first step. That's your first step, is crushing a PST and making sure you can hit those at least optimum scores. Really, you should be aiming for getting in the top tier score range. So you're good to go. You don't have to worry about anything, any of the aspects of the PST. That's what you should be aiming for. But then, it's that, okay, well, it's like you're in sports. You go through the test to see if you qualify to even be on the team, right? In football, go through the combine, right? You go through that. Okay, you're selected. You're on the team. Well, now the real work happens in the training part of this, right? On the training field prior to game day. And Buds is game day. That's game day. That's when you go to Buds and you show up and show off in a certain way. You show up and you're ready to perform.
Yes.
Whereas guys go through the PST, they're on the team, but they never throw the football. They never practice tackles. They never want to go to the gym. They don't want to practice sprints. And then they expect to show up to game day and be ready to crush and win and dominate. And if you were playing professional sports, guys would be like, what the heck are you thinking, man? You're on the team, but you don't even put the work in. You're not out there practicing throwing the football or tackling or any of this stuff, practicing your plays, and you expect to show up to game day and still win. In professional sports, it makes like no sense at all, but that's still how a lot of guys, you know, anybody really focuses on when they want to go to Buds or anything, any high level selection course. Many times is what happens is they get that PST under their belt and they're like, okay, well, I must be good enough for Buds because I, you know, check the box on my contract. So we're good to go. Right. Well, there's the whole practicing that you need to put in, the training you need to put in before you show up to game day. Because once you get to game day, there's no, let's reevaluate and like, oh yeah, you know, he's a great guy. We'll just keep him here. We'll keep him here. We'll train him up because we see he's got a lot of potential. Well, if you're not passing the standards, then you're going to get performance dropped.
Yep.
And that's not where you want to be at.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's more ways, you know, you going in there with a never quit attitude, that's great. But if you can't meet the standards to get, you know, through the minimum standards, I mean, you're going to be performance dropped. Another thing that gets a lot of people is just negative feedback. You know, a lot of the type of people who like going to Buds or, you know, guys, and be honest, is that they've just crushed everything that they've ever done. They've never failed at anything. And then they show up at Buds and they are getting treated like crap, negative feedback constantly, you know, from the instructors. And that messes with you. That messes with someone who's, you know, never failed anything and was the team captains every sport he ever played and, you know, never had a problem in school and just crushed life in general. And then, you know, that negative feedback, which is all encompassing, that they don't hold anything back over there. You have to be able to handle negative feedback. And I find that athletes who have, you know, have played sports or, you know, even martial arts as well, where they're having an instructor tell them what to do and how to do it, and they screw it up and then they have to redo it over and over again. If you've grown up used to that kind of training, it's not that difficult to have the negative feedback for you. But if you're one of those guys that have just never failed at anything and they're just, you know, when they get the instructors, it can get into your head really quickly with some of their methodology. I don't want you to give away all your secrets out there at Buds, but what were some of the more funny things that perhaps maybe as a Buds instructor that you've done to just see if this messes with the class in a way?
So there's, especially on day one of second phase, most of the times the class comes into second phase and they're fired up. You know, they just finished first phase. They finished hell week. their class got whittled down. They're on cloud nine. They're just ready to roll. You know, they're ready to go. They're fired up. The class is just pumped. And then they come into second phase, and the first thing that might happen that day and day one is like a personnel inspection or barracks inspection. And it's pretty darn hard. Most people don't pass. And so there's this point of like, hey, remember where you are. Remember what you set out to do. And you're still like, you're barely into butts. I mean, you barely made it in. You passed one phase out of three. You still got two more to go. Remember where you're at. You go through this inspection, and then you still have a timed run in right after this inspection. So if you don't do so well in your room or your barracks inspection, your personal inspection, then man, this run ain't going to go so good for you. And they might not pass their first 4 mile time run in second phase, just because they've, you know, of situations that happen post inspection. And so that brings guys down a notch, and they just have to remember where they're at, right? They just have to remember where the heck they are, because this is, you're still at buds. There's still huge standards. In fact, timed evolutions get faster as you go into each phase. And that's one thing that we would do, is just put them through a barracks inspection, a personal inspection. Standard never changes. We keep the standard very high from first phase. And like, if you don't, you know, we're not changing. Like, we're not just going to be your buddy, right?
Right.
You're not a SEAL yet. You still got a long ways to go. Just remember where you are. And so we'll put you through a barracks inspection, personal inspection. It's pretty hard to pass. And then we'll have a time run after that and see how everything goes. And just reminding everybody, hey, this is buds. This is something you got to stay focused on, right? That's 100% what you have to stay focused on. And because if you have distractions, if you feel like you've arrived at that point, well, you have a long ways to go still. So,
yeah, you know what? Like I remember the hammer dropping when second phase hit. Yeah, the hammer dropped again. And right, you're right. We dropped probably 70% of our class, and you know, we're whittled down. It's so manageable. You know, right. You got 30 or 40 dudes now instead of 140. And I just remember one instructor saying, "Oh hell, anybody can be a zombie and make it through Hell Week. You guys haven't done anything yet." You know, and I just got to thinking, I'm like, damn. <Yeah. laughs> I guess you're right.
Right. And then you get them in the pool, which is a whole other, you know, situation for them to go through. And some of these guys have never dove before, which is fine. Yeah. You don't have to have any dive experience prior to going to the Navy, because you start out learning the basics of the basics. But within 2 weeks, you know, you're hitting up OC8 pool comp, which is, it's not an easy test to pass. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where another big speed bump within the buds experiences is pool comp OC8. And if you can handle just grinding it out and going through Hell Week and just one foot in front of the other, you know, anybody, like the instructor said, anybody could do that. Anybody could be a zombie and just keep moving forward. But when you're put under that stressful situation, when your body and your mind is telling you to panic and get the heck to the surface, you're going to have to use your head. You're going to have to calm your body, calm your heart rate, think clearly in that stressful environment, and execute the next step, even when your body's screaming for air. And that's the next level for these guys too, is reminding them, hey, situational awareness is super important. Attention to detail is even more important. Like, you have to level up in second phase, because once you go into second phase and you learn the dive, how to dive and how to do combat swimmer operations, well, the next phase is third phase, where you're going to be handling live ammunition. You're going to be shooting guns. You're going to be blowing things up. And if you can't handle step-by-step procedures that are in a very controlled environment with safety divers and instructors and medical personnel, if you can't handle a little underwater stress, then we're not going to trust you with the firearm in third phase. So really, it's just remembering where you're at, staying locked on through each phase, through each part of the process, and never getting complacent, because you'll see it. Guys will get complacent coming into second phase, and then we lock it on real quick to remind them, hey, if you're not staying sharp through this phase, you're not going to progress, because we're not going to allow somebody to move into third phase who we don't trust underwater.
You know, that's a good point. Did you see any quitters in second phase? Because we had one quitter in my buds class in second phase, just because the water got that stressful for them. But you know, there were a significant number of people that got kicked out, you know, with failing pool comp. Did you have a certain percentage that was an average of, I mean, normally, difference between rolling and kicking out, obviously. They'll probably roll you for a class if you're at least haven't failed anything. But did you notice a certain percentage of second phase drops or?
Not really, to be honest. There was, you know, there's a few guys every, you know, every so often there was one or two guys who had just, you could tell they were not, they're not cut out. And they go through the different open circuit dives. And if they, they get an opportunity to pass each dive, you know, four chances. And, but if those, if we can tell that, hey, this guy, he's failing multiple evolutions and all of them are dive related. And it's just really difficult for him. Many times it's more of a performance drop than it would be their DORing. We would still hang a bell on the side of the pool deck where it's just more of a mind thing. Hey, there's the bell, man. Go ring the bell if you don't want to do the dive. But really, really very, very few people actually quit in second phase. It's more of a performance drop, performance roll. The big ones that gets people that they don't think about too often is the tread. They don't really train for the tread, or they don't think that it's going to be challenging for them. And then when they get the twin 80s on their back and they can't, they have their hands above the water and they can't arch forward. They have limited mobility and they're just basically like a board up and down the water and they're treading with a weight belt on. That's one of the things that we saw too, is guys that they panic doing a tread, which that should be something that everybody can go through and have no problems with, but guys are getting rolled for that. Sometimes it's in, I don't think we dropped anybody for the tread, but it was really something that was a challenge for people. They didn't train for it. They didn't prepare for it. They didn't think it was going to be a problem, but really quitting on their own, very, very rare.
Yeah. Second. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, out of the four classes that where I went through, I'd only saw one person quit in second phase. When I say four classes, you know, the class before and after me and all that, but wow. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Warrior Calling. You know, first of all, great Instagram. I love it. It's so clean. Got really cool buds pictures, you know, there that you put in there. Mm-hmm. And then your comment section or the comments and description of those pictures are what I would expect a buds instructor to say, right? Mm-hmm. They're just really good information, not just, hey, check out this picture. Right. It's, you know, you're really helping people, you know, see what's going on in that picture, you know, with some detail that not many people have. So I want to give you a kudos to your Instagram page. And if you guys aren't following The Warrior Calling on Instagram, you should, especially if you want to do this job in your future.
Thanks for that. Yeah, we've put a lot of work into it, and I have. So my sister, she helps me with really kind of keeping it curated. So for me, I get the photos together, I do the captions and all that, but she's really, really been helping me set it up just so it looks very, very clean. Cause that's the image that I want. I want that to be out there where guys can come there and get inspired, motivated, and learn something too. When they come to our Instagram, there's a lot of information out there on elite training, on elite performance, fitness training, buds, soft prep. There's just so much information that I didn't want to be just like everybody else out there. And I wanted to set myself apart as different. And so hopefully that's been the case so far. I try to be genuinely myself. So bringing in Q&A, we do that within Instagram stories, that type of thing.
Smart.
Yeah, which has been great. I also have an email list. So I'm going to be opening that more for people to just get information and to get some, you know, tactics on training or whatever it might be through email as well. But really Instagram's kind of been the thing that's been helping us grow and just reaching more people. So we're just going to continue to stay there and grow that way. I think as far as our training code, our programming, really it's, we have two courses that we're focusing on helping people with. So we have a SEAL Ready program, which is, we call it SEAL Ready program, but it's designed for people that are training for soft selection. So it could be Army Ranger, you know, Army Special Forces, Marine Recon. Mostly the people that we work with are guys going to BUDS. But that's our SEAL Ready program. It's 12 weeks long. It's a immersive type of program where they get two Zoom calls a week with myself, another former SEAL, another BUDS instructor. So we have like a, we have a team of coaches. It's not just myself that these, the people going through have, which is, I think, something unique for us as well. Is like, I know it's like a SEAL team. You know that you're not the only guy who can do all the jobs in the platoon, right? You have the sniper, you have the breacher, you have the comms guy. And it's the same thing for our team. I know that I'm not necessarily the best guy to be talking about endurance runs. Like, I don't run ultra marathons. I don't run those really long runs, but I really enjoy the calisthenics, the weight training, the CrossFit style, like the really high intensity workouts. Like, that's really what I enjoy. And that's the type of experience I can bring to the table. So I bring in these other people onto our team to help each person going through our programming, which I think sets us apart as unique. We have a nutrition coach as well. So everybody that goes through our 12 weeks SEAL Ready program has not just myself, but they have multiple people that are helping them prepare, train, and level up in multiple areas that they need to be leveled up in for BUDS prep.
Yeah, nice.
So it is unique. We do have a second course we're launching later in February, which is really designed for people that want to train like a SEAL, but they're, you know, they could be in their 40s, 50s, or whatever, and they don't have the goal of going to BUDS, but they want to train like a SEAL. They want to actually maybe prepare for a PST, not necessarily go to BUDS, but they want to train like that. They'll still get our mindset calls, they'll still get nutrition coaching, but their goals are going to be different than people going to BUDS. Because I, and my passion is to eventually focus on, like, really develop that out too, so I can help more people. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, yes, my number one goal is to help people that want to go into the military and train at a high level. Like, that's number one. My second goal is to help anybody that wants to train at an elite level, that wants to learn breathing techniques that will help you calm your heart rate, cold water immersion, the fitness training mindset, all of that can help you in your job, in your life, and just really pushing yourself to the next level in human performance. So that's sort of our focus right now is SEAL Ready program number one. We're launching a second course in February.
Nice. Very smart. You know, one thing that I found very helpful in when I was getting my business going and still is diversifying. Because, you know, not everybody wants to be a SEAL, right? Okay. But they don't mind being coached by one, right? You know, regardless of what they want to do. And diversifying all your opportunities for people to, you know, be better has been very rewarding for me as well. Tell me this. I always like asking other coaches this. Do you have something that pops in your head of one of the most rewarding things that you've ever done as a coach for another human? Whether that is going to BUDS or it's, losing 100 pounds or whatever that is, an interesting story that comes to you in mind on really why, once again, your why you actually do this, right? What is that person that comes to mind whenever you say, this is why I do this?
Yeah, I love that. And just why I did this in the first place, just thinking about what I was like and what my inadequacies were starting out and how I was a bullied kid. I was beat up. I didn't know how to do anything physical. And so really at the core foundation is that I want to help more people like that who, yes, they want to be a SEAL. They want to train at elite level. They want to perform, but they don't know where to start. They don't know where to start. A good example is we actually work with a guy and he wasn't training for BUDS. He was training. He actually wanted to go through our SEAL Ready program to train with everybody that was going to BUDS, but he's in mid 40s and he's just a guy in business and he's here in Los Angeles. And he's one of the guys I think about where he put the work in and he saw transformation in his life. He was on the calls with the guys and he brought his life experience to the calls. And really he helped level up the entire group that was going through training at that time. This is last year. And he really because he put himself out there and he was swimming in a pool that was like 10 meters long, like super short. But he was doing all the workouts. He was showing up to all the calls and he was losing weight. He was working out training hard. And that type of transformation was almost like almost more rewarding than anybody else's, because he was putting himself out there in this community of guys that are training for Buds, but he's not even planning on going there. He just wants to become a better human. And I think the biggest feedback we got from everybody else that was in that cohort going through that program was, man, this guy, it was so great having him in our team, in our group, because it made me think outside the box. It made me want to level up in life, because he's this guy that doesn't necessarily want to go to Buds, but he's not letting his life just dictate how his life goes. He wants to keep pushing and training hard. So that was one of the reasons also why we wanted to set up a second course, second program for people like that. Love where it. Yeah, they're just not, they don't want to go to Buds, but man, they want a change in their life. And that's, I really want to help more people.
You know, I love it, because I have found that fitness can be that catalyst too, you know, right, for changing not just your body and how you feel and how you look, but it can change everything from your energy levels at work, your productivity, your creativity, your relationships. I mean, all of it can be enhanced by getting after it physically. And I think teaching people that has been probably one of the most rewarding. And one of my great stories is just, you know, I had a guy lose 150 pounds and just and joined the Army, you know, and he's a regular Army guy, but you know, he was 350 pounds when he started.
Wow.
And, you know, got less than 200 and, you know, met the height, weight standards, met the physical fitness standards, and, you know, joined the Army. And, I mean, it took over a year to do, but you know, that is a mentally tough guy just to keep going going. I mean, he went from walking with us, because I wouldn't have a 350 pounder run at all, because you know, his knees would hate him. And we just, you know, he just evolved into this machine, and he was an inspiration to our whole group. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's those people. I mean, those are the people that when you see at the gym, those are the ones you're like that. I mean, those people are the ones that are deserve the gold star right there for going and training hard. And maybe they don't want to be a SEAL, right? It doesn't matter, but they have a goal and they're shooting for it and they're heading that direction. And it's so freaking inspiring for everybody else. Well, if they can do it and they can show up and they look like this and they're ignoring everybody else or what other people might be thinking, and they're still getting after it and they're going for their goal. Well, then what the heck am I doing? You know,
it's the same mindset. It's the same mindset you have to have. You know, that's what's so neat about it. When someone who's trying out for Buds is hanging out with a guy who's trying to lose 150 pounds, they realize they have they need the same mindset to continue moving forward. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man, love it.
That's inspiring, though. I love seeing the results. I think that's the next level, too. Just if you're training people and you're seeing results, like that's the most rewarding thing as a coach. Is just seeing these guys, seeing their confidence level go through the roof and seeing the transformation, seeing the results. I mean, it can't get any better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever I have a lifestyle change like that, compared to taking somebody from 10 pull-ups to 20 pull-ups, you know, it's night and day. The difference in how that makes me feel as a coach is absolutely, you know, night and day. It's fun to see the guy go from 10 to 20, but it is so rewarding to see the guy lose 80 to 100 pounds in a year and change the whole health outlook for the next decade, you know, for
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, Joe, is there anything that you want to finish on? You know, obviously the warriorcalling.com is where people can find you. The Warrior Calling on Instagram. You have other social medias that are out there? Is Instagram mainly where you get most of your folks?
Yeah, Instagram is mainly our focus right now. We're not doing any other platforms. We do have a Facebook group, but really Instagram is the best place. Go to our website, and that's a great place to learn more about what we do. And we do have an application there. If anybody is interested in training, they can go and click that and go through application process. But yeah, we, one other thing too, is we do events. So we have a gym that we train at in Coronado, and we, I know that's part of, on social media, people will see us training in person, but really 90% of the people that we coach are all remote. So they're across the states, but we do have a gym that we train at in Coronado. And so when we do our events, we have them at that gym. So we'll have one, actually we have an event coming up in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And people that come to those events, it's going to be 2 days, and they're clients of ours. We don't really open it up because it's a small, really kind of a smaller gym, but we don't have room for 50 people. So we keep it pretty small, which is just for guys that we're working with within our programming. And we're going to, yeah, but that's the next level for people. Is it's not like a, it's not like a hoo-yah event where you go there and you kind of go push yourself where you're, you know, you could potentially quit. You know, those are great events where you really push yourself, but this is a event where people go to learn, to take on some new skill sets. We're going to have all our coaches there, and are going to be putting out information for all these guys. So we'll do some cold water immersion. We'll do some open water swims in the bay. We'll have soft sand running. We have, we'll do a physical therapy clinic. So a bunch of different things to help everybody level up. So that's our next big thing right now, is our event. So we're pumped about it. Absolutely.
No, I love that. You know, something we do every quarter is we do something we call the Spec Ops Triathlon, where it's a 4 mile run, a 4 mile ruck, and a 1 mile swim. And we used to do it in a local pool, but with COVID, we can't fit that many people in the pool anymore. So we do it. We do it in the Chesapeake Bay, which is disgusting, but it's a really safe beach where we do it. It's like 4 feet deep for, you know, 50 yards. And so you just stand up if you're having issues. But yeah, something you should consider. Spec Ops Tri is a great little tool, because you're going to run at Buds, you're going to swim at Buds, and you're going, and it's swim with fins at Buds, you know, swim with fins for this Spec Ops Tri. And just a backpack or a weight vest with like 40 or 50 pounds in it to on the beach. So it's all beach stuff, and no logistics, you know, it's just, we're just going to swim to that cone and back, and it's really fun. So
that's great. What time of year do you normally run that?
Well, we try it every quarter. However,
okay,
this last, the winter, the water was 48 degrees, and we decided to blow off the water part, and we just did like a run, ruck, run, you know, with some bear crawls thrown in there. So it was, it wasn't too bad though, but
a bit chilly.
So sometimes you gotta, you know, be smart and realize that not everybody has a wetsuit, and even at 48 degrees, you're never gonna see 48 degrees at Bud. So why worry about it? And so, but we'll do it when it's 60 degrees, 60 to 70. And in the summer, it's like 85, and it's awful.
Oh, yeah.
Those have been a lot of fun for us. And you know, we get people who, it's kind of like our event as well here on the East Coast, that people come out and, you know, try to give them a patch or something, and, you know, eat something out.
That's great.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good to have those events to test yourself, to see where you're at. And then, you know, it's always good to compare, you know, I just say, hey, this guy's faster than me. Like, wow, I need to get faster, or I need to get stronger, or wow, I didn't realize that I need to be swimming that fast in the water. And it just, it's good to be around that environment of competition, and just to push yourself and find other people who are like-minded in their training, make friends, and then continue to compete against them. It might be your best friend, but you're always trying to be better than them. So that's why these events are so good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know where I see it being very helpful, Joe, is seeing is believing, right? And so for the guy who is about to ship out in another month, he's at that same event as someone who's just starting, right? And then you see that guy who is about to ship out, and he's been crushing everything, and you say, oh, that's what I have to be like whenever I get to that point. I shouldn't be worried about going to a recruiter right now. I need to get to that point. I need to get to that level before I go talk to anybody. And if you do that, I promise you, your likelihood of being successful and, you know, recruiters and mentors taking you seriously is going to be a whole lot better for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just being realistic with where you're at, and the reality of where you're at. And then, okay, well, if this is the weakness, then that's what we're going to focus on. That's what we're going to work on. But it takes a bit of humility to go into that and say, hey, you know what? Maybe I am the slowest guy there. Maybe I do need to lose some weight, but that's okay. It's better to be honest with yourself than to just lie to yourself and show up to some selection course and just not be ready or wash out in the first week. It's not worth it.
It makes no sense. And, you know, just because you're 18, don't think you need to be there before you're 19. I mean, people think they have such a small window to go to Bud's, you know, they think 20 is old, you know, where, you know, you got until 29. I mean, that's not a window. That's a barn door, right? Yeah. You have a wide way. I mean, you could have two careers before you really need to pull the trigger and head to Bud's. Don't be in a hurry. Don't be in a hurry and go when you're ready. But I will say this, on the flip side, there's always an 18-year-old who proves me wrong in every class, but you have to understand those 18-year-olds are remarkable human beings, right? They have something special that I didn't have at 18 years old, and them being able to make it through Bud's at 18 is absolutely phenomenal. You know,
And at some point you have to pull the trigger too. You have to commit and you have to go all in. And that's something that everybody has to do on their own. They have to commit 100%. And the crazy thing is, like, sometimes it's hard to commit 100%, because if we commit 100% and we don't make it, heaven forbid, that then we are seen as a failure, or failure to ourselves, or failure to our friends or our family. And it's just, but if you're not committed 100%, if you don't want to commit to that full level, then the reality of it is you're probably not going to ever reach your goal. It's just, you have to be committed 100%. So if your maturity level needs to progress a little bit in order for you to be able to commit 100%, well, then allow it to get there. Allow it to get to that point. That's just my advice for people that are preparing. It's just become 100% committed to the goal you have, whether you want to be a Navy SEAL or not. Just whatever it is your goal, focus on it and go 100% for that, because that's going to increase your chances of actually getting to that goal and reaching it and crushing it.
Yep. Absolutely. And have an answer for that question that pops in your head. You know, what is your why? Yeah. You know, why are you doing this? You better have an answer, because that question will pop up in your head eventually.
At some point.
All right, Joe. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this. I really appreciate your time. Like I said, it's not every day I get to have a Bud's instructor on my show. So really honored to have you on here. I really wish you well with Warrior Calling. If you need anything from me, happy to share, you know, what I do as well with you. And, you know, I think we're all better in this world if we're, you know, helping each other out versus, you know, competing and, you know, just being dicks about it. You know,
so, right. We're all focused on the same goals, helping the same types of people reach those goals. Yeah. So, yeah, I know, it's been an honor being on this. I've always respected you. I mean, you're the guy to go to. And so thanks for having me on the call today. It's been really great chatting with you.
Well, thank you. Very nice of you to say that. I appreciate it. So guys, until next time, you guys make sure you go check out The Warrior Calling on Instagram and thewarriorcalling.com on the internet. And you'll see Joe and his crew out there getting stuff done and helping people achieve their goals. So guys, go check that out. And Joe, once again, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.